Hi, today's August 25th, 2019. This is Mobile Views Podcast 300, and I'm Tadagasa Ward, my good friend John Westfall. And we're joined by some other good friends, so we'll start, and I was going to say alphabetically, but it's not even close. I'll try it alphabetically by last name. I'm a Jack Cook, Stephen Hughes, who we haven't had in a while. Sven Johansson and Frank McPherson, all here, all old friends. Boy, I've known Frank for, what are we coming up now, Frank? Like 25 years, something like that? Pretty close, I think.
Sure. Who's keeping count?
Yeah. All right. So there wasn't any tech news that I found interesting, except maybe the announcement of Disney Plus's launch date and things. But we can talk about that later. So I think Steven had a really good idea. So just talk about new stuff we've bought in the last year or thereabouts. And so I'll go last. So why don't we start with Frank? Because he actually has a whole blog on it.
Well, you know, I'm a writer by vocation. So I took the opportunity to use this to write my notes up. But and I don't know if I'm gonna stomp over your
it's all right.
Purchase there, Todd, because I think it's the same. I mean, the main purchase in the past year for myself has been the iPad Mini 5.
Nice.
Which I bought to replace the Mini 4 I'd been using for several years.
Yep, same
and
here.
And I bought it primarily because it has the faster processor in it, and the Mini 4 was getting long in the tooth for me.
Ah. Well, for me, just as a FYI, for me, the big deal was that it supported the Apple Pencil. You know, and that was like, whoa, let's do this. You know, I've always said that if the iPad Mini could actually support the Apple Pencil, I'd be in. And so, good to my word, do you use an Apple Pencil at all, Frank?
Oh yeah, I bought a pencil just for the Mini because I also have a Pro, mm-hmm. and I had a pencil for it. So yeah, I fell down that rabbit hole of spending another $100 for another pencil to use with it. The combination brings me back to the old Newton message pad days. Unfortunately, the software isn't exactly the same, but it brings back a certain amount of memory there.
That is a good point. I still have my Apple Newton. Yeah. Okay.
I wish that iOS provided a more native support for the pencil, meaning that, you know, the operating system handled the pencil input, not the apps like they do today. Which would allow you to basically maybe write across the screen like you did on the Newton, and then the text be converted and inserted at wherever the cursor is located.
Right.
But I can live with the digital ink. I think there is a few apps available that do the handwriting recognition, but that's not much of a factor these days because the digital ink and the imaging, the images it results in are relatively small or compressed and doesn't take up a lot of storage.
And the hand and your, well, except for my handwriting. Handwriting is also searchable in some of the apps now. So even if you don't convert, you can still search and, you know, copy and paste and things like that. All right. What else did you get?
The other thing I bought, which I basically learned from and in the end would recommend not buying, is the Google Titan security key. So Google has, I guess, historically done some of their own development around security hardware for their internal use, and had created this brand called Titan for their security products. It's integrated into some of the Pixel phones. Late last year, I think it was, they announced the USB key called Titan, the Titan USB security key, similar to Yubico's products and several others. And, you know, being that it was part of Google and they had a bundle where they gave you the USB key plus the Bluetooth key for, I think it was $50, I went ahead and purchased it. Now, there's two negatives with this. It's surprising. First of all, the USB key is USB Type-A.
Yeah.
Which is ironic because it's intended to work with the, I would assume, the Pixelbook that only has a USB Type-C port. They do include a dongle to convert from A to C, so you can at least use it. But to me, I don't know why they wouldn't do the other way around, right? Make the key USB Type-C, give me the dongle to convert to Type-A. I'm probably not going to use it as much.
Or do a two-tailed system with A and C. Yeah.
Yeah. The other problem is the Bluetooth dongle. that's intended to be used with smartphones. And shortly after they announced it, they basically had to pull back release because there were some vulnerabilities discovered in that particular product that they since patched. But the fundamental, I think we all have experience with Bluetooth in its flakiness in general, but the security around Bluetooth is probably a bit oxymoronic to use it with something called the security key. So personally, I would say avoid buying a Titan. For the same money, go and get yourself a Yubico, which is a much better brand, at least well known, has a variety of different ports and form factors, and you know, you can buy a straight up Type C version of it.
Okay, and speaking of Yubico, I think I see that in Steve's list. Steve? Oh, I think he unmuted himself. Let's see. Let's see where Steve is. Steve, you there? Uh-oh. Did we lose Steve? I see him. Can't hear you.
Yeah, I see him as well.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
This actually would be a good time to talk about two-factor.
Okay, let's do that.
Steve's list. So maybe while Steve is getting himself unmuted, remuted,
yeah,
whatever it is. It's interesting. So I looked at Frank's post, and I looked at the Titan security key that I hadn't looked at before.
Right.
I had used the Yubico thing stuff years ago. What I've been very impressed by, though, and I think is sort of the most seamless integration of two-factor, is a challenge push straight to an Apple Watch or to any smartwatch, for that matter. And that's what I've been very happy that Microsoft Authenticator rolled out a couple of months ago, where now instead of just getting a code on my watch, which I threw 1Password, I can look up two-factor codes on my watch. So that was nice about a year and a half ago when I was able to start doing that. But it really is slick when you go to log into a public computer or a place where you're logging in with something with two-factor, type in your password, wait 2 or 3 seconds, and just tap your watch, and you're logged in. I think that's sort of the way I would like to see two-factor go when you have a device like that. If you don't, then Yubico, I think, is a great alternative. But if you already have an authenticated device that you're wearing, that seems like the fastest way to do two-factor these days.
Yeah, you know, and I haven't tried any of those. Maybe you guys can, and I'm hoping Steven can unmute. Or you back, Steven?
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay.
Yeah, I have the Yubico, what's called the Security Key NFC one I use. I actually have about 3 of them. It works really well because it works with your phone. You can just tap it to your phone.
Yeah.
You can use it with other applications, like if you have a password and you have, like, LastPass, you can use it. Nice. These came out a newer version one too that I just have a problem with too. It's I just have a USB on it. I just have one that lightning can use.
Yeah. Hey Steven, you're coming in a little low for some reason now. Volume wise.
Oh really?
Yeah. Okay, if you're a little nearer, or grab a better headset later. But anyway. So yeah, so you have a YubiKey and from Yubico, I think. And and do you agree with Frank that it's probably a superior solution to the Titan?
It's Titan. More well known. I mean, it's used everywhere. I mean,
it's been around longer, yeah.
They also have like a fixed compliance one too.
You know, so how do you deal with it when you go to work? I mean, so okay, at home, fine. You have access to everything. You can install what you want. You can pair it what you want. What about it in the office where you may not have administrative rights to things? Is it, can you set it up like that, or do you need an IT administrator to give you permission?
If the USB port is not disabled, or if you're using some type of security aspect, you can use it for mobile. Otherwise, for most governments, they use what's called like a chip card, which can be switched out.
Yeah.
Another two-factor, but a chip built into your identity card.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, Steven, we're getting some drops from you. Can you grab a pair of maybe a headset and a microphone later, and we'll rejoin you after you do that. Anyway, Jack, what do you got?
Really not a lot of new stuff. Of course, it was almost 10 months ago. I got the a new Samsung Galaxy Note 9.
Yeah.
And boy, I have to tell you, the love affair has continued. And more as I use it. When they announced the the new 10.
Yeah.
You know, I had given some thought to it, but I don't think there's that much of a difference between the 10 and the in what I have, the Note 9. So other than the processor, and I'm unsure of the differences between the processor, but and there's not that much difference in memory with the new one versus what I have. I have 8 gig of RAM, and the new one has 12, so I'm not really quite sure. I haven't had any skipping with movies or anything. So
nice.
That works good. But all the other features is not enough of a difference to force me to make a change. So if somebody's looking for a new phone, I'd recommend the Galaxy Note 9.
Yeah.
It works real well.
So Jack, amongst the friends here, and all of us here were at one time or another Microsoft mobile MVPs, or what else were we called? Windows Phone MVPs, Windows CE MVPs, were various things that were based on mobile stuff. And I think amongst us, you were the staunchest of the Windows Phone supporters. I mean, how do you feel now that you've made the migration, that you've gone to the dark side of Android?
Well, it is interesting because there's so much familiarity between the two devices. I use a Microsoft launcher.
Oh, you do? That makes a difference, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. It was, when I first got it, I mean, it was just so confusing and it didn't make sense to me. And I was saying, this is stupid. and then after two days, someone, it might have been Steve, I don't know. Someone said, install a Microsoft launcher.
Mm.
And I installed that and it made it, the familiarity all came into place. It all made sense.
So nice.
Microsoft did a great job with that. But I'm still learning things every day, because it's just, there's so much to the device, and I guess I'm just getting older and slower, so I'm just taking my time. But I really, really like it. But that's really the biggest piece of new equipment that I've got. So, although I did get, and I have to tell you guys, it's really kind of cool. I did get a new portable battery.
Oh.
And I got this thing called a Power Juice, which I can just lay my phone down on top of it. So it's, I don't need to attach wires to it. And I just put my phone on top of it and it charges it. Just like if you have a charger on your desktop that you just place it on without attaching wires. But it's really cool. And Sven has one too.
Yeah.
So
it's like a Lumia one. It came with was around the 920 time frame.
Oh, sure.
So is it basically a Qi charger?
But this is just a power bank. So yeah. And I can also take and plug in two USB devices. So if I wanted to use wires, it has fast charging. But if I don't care about the fast charging, I'll just put it down and put my phone on top of it, and it just tops it off and works pretty well.
Yeah, pretty well. You guys on the mainland just make me envious. Go ahead. Because, I can't ship anything that's rechargeable to Hawaii. I mean, it.
Really?
Well, I won't say anything, but many things. So I can't order any lithium ion. I can't order USB portable chargers and things like that. They won't ship them to Hawaii.
Wow.
And in fact, some camera, for a while, you couldn't even buy a camera. You couldn't buy like a Canon or Nikon or whatever through Amazon. Amazon wouldn't ship them to Hawaii. At one point, I couldn't even get a Chromebook. I couldn't get the Acer, one of their early Chromebooks that I really wanted, one of their Flip series that I wanted. I couldn't get it. But some of that's been lifted or eased, because I was able to order a Chromebook, which I'll talk about later, in the last 2 months. But, okay. Yeah, go ahead and make me jealous. Continue on.
That's all I have for new stuff. Besides
okay,
that, I'm getting ready to pay for... partially pay for my son's wedding. So.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Two more weeks.
That doesn't sound cheap.
No.
All right, gosh, I'm looking at Sven's list. I'm going to go get a sandwich and stuff while Sven talks.
It's not that long.
Go ahead, Sven.
Yeah, when Steve suggested, you know, what tech we've got in the last year, I started looking around and said, geez, what have I really bought in the last year? And there's really nothing big, because I keep looking at, oh, we got all the new MacBooks out, and I'm looking at my 2015 MacBook. It works perfectly fine. Yeah. It's running, you know, beta, the latest operating system.
Yeah.
Runs great. I got a Surface 5. I don't see any difference in the Surface 6. I got an iPhone 10. Nothing great on the new ones. You know, it works fine. So I haven't really bought anything. I'm looking at the 11, and I'm looking at the Pixel 4, but I don't know that there's anything on them that's really going to excite me. So I did pick up AirPods in the Qi case.
Yeah.
Just because I wanted the case, and I didn't want to pay $80 for just the case. So, you know. But yeah. And I got some Powerbeats 3. They're pretty neat. My wife just ordered the Powerbeats Pro. She likes the way the Powerbeats fit, but she'd prefer them without the cable in the back. And she'd been waiting for something other than black.
Wow.
And that just came out. I don't know what is so hard about making three other colors, but you know, it took them 6 months to do that.
Yeah. Well, it is Apple, so you know.
Yeah, yeah, colors are, you know, other than white, you know, they have a tough time with it, I guess.
Right. The anodizing process or something.
Yeah. The one thing I thought was kind of interesting, there's this company called Uni that's making a lot of little peripherals, and they make a really nice little USB-C hub, which they call a hub, and everybody calls a hub, but it's not. It's a dock or a port replicator.
Hmm.
But I've got the link there on the page.
Yep.
But it's thicker than most of the ones that you find around. Everybody's trying to make them really skinny, and they get hot. This thing doesn't heat up at all. I had a friend's MacBook over, and we ran monitors, keyboards, power through it, and it just stayed very nicely. And they have a nice little silicon case around it to keep it off your desk and stuff, so it gets a little airflow. But so that's a really nice little thing. I found when Apple decided they didn't have the technology capable to make a, you know, wireless charger for their wireless devices, I got this Hard Cider Slice. It's Hard Cider Labs. It does two phones, and it does the Apple Watch. Now, you got to put them in the right spot, but it does all three of those things. So, So it works really nice. And you know how I am about wanting to get things to plug things into.
Yeah.
Yeah, a long time ago, this Native Union Smart Bridge is a really nice one. But the great thing about it is it's got an 8-foot cord on it.
Wow.
So if you're in a hotel room, you can just, most hotel rooms, you can probably string it all the way across the room. You know, and they always have one outlet somewhere that you can't reach. So this gives you two AC outlets, four USB-A's, and one USB-C. It's a nice unit. Not very big either. And then Peak Designs Tech Pouch, expensive, but it fits a whole lot of stuff. So, and my rant, my Pixel 3 decided it was going to be a battery bloat.
Hmm.
Looking at it one day, and you could set it down on a table and spin it. It was, you know, kind of curved that way, so you just spin it around. So I looked at it and said, oh, gee, it's pregnant. called up Google. Took me two times to get somebody to do something about it. It's kind of funny. The first time the rep was really nice, had me take pictures of it, sent pictures in, said, fine, that's great, and somebody will contact you with the rest of the information. And then 24 hours later, nobody had, so I got back on the chat, and this guy said, oh, yeah, no problem. Here it is. I got the thing in the mail, you know, email. Here's your return slip and everything else. And we've got one already shipped out to you. What ticked me off, though, is when you do cross ships like that, everybody does, they put a hold on your credit card for, you know, in case you don't ship the other one back.
Right.
Well, this is a Pixel 3. The hold on my credit card was $899.
Wow.
They're currently on sale for, not on sale, but not a sale, but their current price is
available for,
Available for $599. You can go inside and look. And they were shipping me a refurb, which I don't think should have been the same. So, you know, I had the opportunity to do a survey afterwards.
Yeah.
And I, you know, kind of said, were you really going to charge me $899 for a refurb of a $599 device?
Right.
Is that what you were going to do?
Did they say anything?
No, they haven't. It was just a survey. So.
Well,
it didn't cost anything, of course, because I shipped the other one back. But that's kind of like cheese, you know?
Yeah, come on. At least Google is living up to their modified slogan, right? Do evil.
Yes, do evil. You know. So.
Well, that reminds me of the bloat issue I had with my iPhone 10 that I talked about last week, yes. Where Apple doesn't do cross ship, so there's no credit card hold. But I was without a phone for 48 hours. It wasn't that big of an issue, but it's sort of. You would think at some point they'd be able to figure out how to put a reasonable hold on versus, you know, $300 is actually closer to what it would cost them. And so put a hold for $300 and then charge you $599 or $899 if you never send it back.
Right.
And the worst they're going to get is they're going to get $300 because that was what was held on the account. So, yeah, that's very frustrating, though.
Yeah. So.
And I see I have one more thing.
What's that?
Your color laser printers.
Oh yeah, it's a brother laser printer that we have a big Girl Scout event. It was like 2 weeks ago. We print a heck of a, we kill a lot of trees. It's very, very, very nice. But our laser printer, we ran out of some cartridges. We were changing cartridges and the thing started making all kinds of noises. So we couldn't go without because it was like 2 days to the event. So we ran down and got a nice new laser printer, $250, color laser printer, network, duplex, the whole schmear. Really nice thing. Came with enough cartridges. The old one, it turns out, it was one of the brand new cartridges that was making the noise. Uh-huh. So we took it down to a place, paid $90 for the guy to tell us that we needed a new $100, $120 cartridge. But yeah, the laser printers are dirt cheap. You know, it's a nice printer.
Yeah, in general, printers are dirt cheap. It's the consumables, yes, right?
It's the consumables. I'll tell you.
Yeah,
I was actually looking at Brother laser consumables lately, and they've got a few now that are they're actually reasonable. A single cartridge for $30. So you need a set of four. You're at $120, but that's what you're paying for one cartridge for. Some of the other models. So Brother, I think, is cornering that market, where that's the market I think Lexmark had for so long, and then Lexmark gave it up and went more high-end, and Brother decided to swoop in.
Well, the ones that I'm doing here is, I think they're $70 a cartridge, mm-hmm. a toner cartridge. So, and you need four. Good thing is it you replace one at a time. You know, if you run out of black, you just put a new black one in, that's it.
Yeah.
It's a lot of inkjet printers. You run out and you got to buy all four of them.
Okay. Let's see if Steven's audio issue is cleared up. Hey, Steven, you still there?
Yeah, absolutely. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Anyway, so I wanted to ask you, what are these Cocoon headphones you have in the show notes? I've never heard of them.
Yeah, these were a Kickstarter set. I got them really cheap. They retail now, I think, for like around $300 mark. Some of the big ones. For about $259, but they rotate. They're just like kind of like your everyday like Bose noise canceling headphones. But this actually has something that's really cool inside. I don't know if you guys can see on the webcam. It has these little metal sensors.
Yeah.
And something to like EEG, so you get like electrocardiogram. You can use them, and it's actually soft on the sides, so you actually can sleep with them, and it actually monitors your sleep, your patterns. I know John's heavily into a lot of that stuff, sleep monitoring stuff. Something I like to wear on the planes too.
That is cool.
It's built into it. It's super comfortable. The sound is done by Onkyo. I know you guys might be familiar with the brand for just a lot of stereo equipment.
Sure, I remember them.
Shaping for it and frequency.
And it says here it alters your audio if you fall asleep with the headphones on.
Yeah, it can slowly fade off.
If you that is cool.
It has some relaxation things too. You can do with it too. So if you're stressful, got anxiety. You can listen to this, and it's supposed to calm you down, kind of like the Calm app has, like, a lot of that stuff.
So much does this cost? I mean, I know you said it's Kickstarter, so...
It's like around $300, like, around the $289, $339 price, depending on
if there's
any. I think I might have some discount codes, too. I'll have to look around. I could probably...
Yeah. And next up, you've got, let's see, I'm looking... Well, you have a long list, too.
Unico already, so the NFC key is, like, another thing I got into is two-factor authentication to save everything. And then software, I was pretty impressed with like the free software app that came out from Cloudflare.
Yeah.
Called, I don't know if you guys might be familiar with the 1.1.1 DNS that they have. So it makes things a little bit faster. It's free to every, like, just about every application out there that you can use. And it kind of gives you like almost like a a basic VPN, and they're working on coming out later this year a more involved VPN, which I know we all highly recommend that everyone else should get.
Yeah.
Too. So that's the Plus VPN services. I think it's supposed to come out probably this fall. That's what I heard. And it's up there with like supposed to be up there with like Nord and ExpressVPN, which I use, and I think John uses the private internet access.
Yep.
I use that one too. Yeah.
Yeah. And I bop between Nord and Express, and I think Nord is like, I think it's around, people are interested, I think it's like $2.99. They have a special offer for 3 years to get logged in at that price. Huh. And then Express at around $7.
Isn't there some question about ExpressVPN's ownership and all of that stuff?
Yeah, as long as it gets audited by a third-party company, like all the you into it, you have to make sure that it's for security processes. Because yeah. Like they've been, so like a petition done for like in different court cases to handle the record, they weren't able to handle. Because as soon as the day after 24 hours, they erased their work right over it.
I see. Okay. All righty. And I see you also a Brave user. I use Brave on my Android phone, but I don't use it anywhere else.
Really? Yeah. I switched over to it. So I have a lot of tabs that are open. And
yeah.
That stays open. It's based on the same Chromium. And then it's a different rendering engine, too, than a Chrome uses. I forget which one it uses. But like Edge is over to Chromium as well.
Yeah.
It's the same. But I've been a fan of Brave. I hate the privacy that they involve with it. A lot of security that they do in the back end. And everything, push every web to be HTTPS, which I think is a great thing. And a lot of founders will have worked with well, sharing a state there.
Yeah, yeah. And it looks like you're also going to, you're looking for a new phone or considering a new phone?
I don't know. I'm just like everyone else. I'm on the, I'm kind of happy with what I got. I have the iPhone or XR or Enter, if you like to call it. And I might move to the new iPhone if it has some technology that is appealing to me. I don't know if it's going to be different. Maybe they'll handle that, something else. I really don't see too much coming down the phone pipe. Same thing like the Google options as well too. Camera done some, which yeah. I don't think Apple has caught up. So maybe next iOS 13.
Okay. Alrighty. We're still having a little bit of audio trouble with you, Stephen. But we're gonna switch to John. Let's see. We got everybody. Yeah, John.
Okay. So I've talked a lot about the technology that I've purchased over the last few years, but so these are kind of the high points. I bought the iPad Pro 11-inch back in, I guess, December, and it's amazed me how much I've just carried and used it. I've actually started carrying it around with me more than I used to carry a tablet, and it's really nice to just pull out and get at least 95% of the work I need to get done, I can get done on an iPad. There's still certain things that my MacBook and my Surface Pro need to be used for. I purchased the Sony DSC HX99 back in the spring before going on vacation. Super long zoom. It was the first point-and-shoot camera that I picked up in probably almost 10 years. And so I've been very happy with that, although I'm still learning the 7,000 menu items that it has. I don't know if I will ever be able to figure that camera completely out. But I do like I like that cameras, unlike phones, still have removable batteries. So I have spare batteries that I can take with me. And this last week or this last month, I was in St. Louis and went to the Botanical Gardens and went on the Budweiser Brewery tour and took a ton of photos on both and did have to do a battery swap halfway through to make sure I could still keep everything I wanted. I'm slowly slipping back into the Apple ecosystem. I have done a very, Stephen notes that Sony's menu system is notoriously bad. That's an understatement. Notorious is an understatement. That's where we're at with it. But I'll figure it out at some point, maybe, before I ditch the camera in 10 more years for another point and shoot. But yeah, I slowly slipped back to the Apple ecosystem. I'd gotten a Surface Pro 4 about 3 years ago for work. And so I had done that at work. I carried the Surface Pro back and forth from office to office. And then finally this last year, I thought, I've got a MacBook Air sitting at home doing nothing. I should just put that in one of the offices and keep the Surface Pro in the other. And that started getting me back into just using the Apple ecosystem more so than Windows. Now, I do run a Windows virtual machine at home on my QNAP NAS, and I do use Windows quite a bit, but I think I'm happier with the integration on the Apple side. I did mention earlier that two-factor authentication, I think, is getting much slicker now, especially when you have a smartwatch that can get the challenges. And Microsoft, I think, has surprised, and surprised me over the last couple of years, really, but how tight Office is on iOS and Android these days. Just the, you know, they really did embrace the idea of make a decent Office. It was unfortunate that they chose platforms that weren't their own for a decent Office experience. But, you know, I have little applets now that, you know, through Siri shortcuts, which used to be the workflow app on iOS, that launch, you know, directly open Excel workbooks and directly open Excel items and Word items through the share links. And you have a good URL scheme to open those things. So it really is nice, especially if you use SharePoint at work, to be able to open up SharePoint documents directly on your phone. It's the point that when people used to say, oh, you're on an iPad instead of a Surface, well, I guess you can't get much work done in on Microsoft Office. Now I can show them things and go, nope, I'm actually doing pretty well on it.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, because actually Sven and I had a conversation with another old friend of mine, that Paul Lawler, who's been a guest on our podcast. Paul was vehemently anti-Chromebook, you know, in our discussions over on Facebook.
Militantly.
And honestly, I hardly use Microsoft Office at home, even though I have a personal Office 365 account. At any rate, I installed the Android versions of Word and Excel and PowerPoint on my new Chromebook, my Acer Spin 13. And boy, it works pretty good. Is it missing stuff? Yeah, it can't do table of contents. I don't think it does indexing, but it does. And it's what I told Paul is, it does probably 90%+ of what 90%+ of people at home need to do. Now, if you're in the office, if you're in enterprise, that's kind of a different story. But for most home users, most of them don't need a table of contents and indexing and all that stuff. So I would contend that it's fine for most people at home.
Yeah, that whole thing started off with Paul saying that 98% of people need a Windows machine.
Mm.
Uh-huh.
But
yeah, I don't think so.
But
I can think about 75% of them that are using just phones.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing, right? Especially in Japan and other places in Asia, and I suspect other places in the world where the phone is the primary computer these days, and maybe the only computer that a person has. Go ahead.
And Stephen points out that Office 365 allows you to use all platforms fairly equally. I think it's really funny that Microsoft Outlook on mobile is a better email client for Gmail than the Gmail client.
Yes, it is.
You know, and just the integration with different cloud storage services, and it's just, they really, I'll give credit. I never would have thought 5 years ago that I'd be using a Microsoft iOS email client, and that's what I use every day.
Yeah, I still find that odd myself, and only because I haven't tried it the way you have. I just use it with my, you know, my Microsoft email, which is mostly spam. Hardly any actual real email, so it's never been a big deal for me. And I'm pretty happy with the Gmail app on both iOS and Android, quite honestly. You know, I was going to ask you. You said that you visited a beer factory with your Sony camera. Did they actually let you take photos in the factory?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. They encouraged you to take as many photos as you wanted. And
wow.
Yeah,
and the reason I asked, you know, I don't drink beer, but
yeah, and drink too, as Stephen pointed out. If you played the tour on right, I was on the 2.5 hour tour, and I figured that theoretically you could drink up to 6 beers in that 2.5 hour time. So
that you can remember.
Yeah.
I was, you know, although I don't drink beer, I did take the tour of the Kirin beer factory in Japan. I'm trying to remember where it was. Was it in Yokohama? I don't remember, but they told us we could not take any photos, which was disappointing because it's those giant vats and things are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always fascinated by manufacturing facilities, but yeah, that was very much. I'm glad you were able to take some photos, And
yeah, we've got the Anheuser-Busch brewery right north of us. It's a little ways, but huge, huge place. They had the Clydesdales there and everything, and you can get tours and take pictures and do all that stuff and have beer. So, well, I was wondering if any of the people here have played with Dex much.
D-E-X? I have not.
Dex, yeah.
Nope.
No? Yeah, because it, you know, with the capability you get in phones now and the mobile apps and everything else, you know, a big screen keyboard and a mouse hooked to your phone is starting to make sense.
Yeah, Steven says it's pretty good. He's still having audio problems, I should say, which is why he's not speaking up, I think. I thought Jack was using that for a while. Or was that? Oh, Jack was using the Windows phone version, I think.
I never had Dex, so.
Okay.
Yeah. Because they're now you can use Dex, Jack. You can use it just with an app on your regular PC, which I don't see the point of, but it gives you an idea of what you can do with it.
Yeah, well, I did try with the Note 9, and it, you know, it works, and you know, I can say that I use, you know, the Android version, but I couldn't see its value. For a variety of reasons, if I'm finding with the Note 9, I mean, because it's the big screen, it's the plus, I guess. I mean, it's like working with a small computer. It's just, it really is pretty a pretty marvelous phone.
So here's an interesting use case for that. There's an article out on The Verge about a pilot that the Chicago Police Department is doing with Dex, where if you see squad cars these days, they're pretty well decked out with computer technology. Mm-hmm. Most of them ride around with a full notebook computer in them.
Mm-hmm.
They're piloting the use of Dex with just a screen and a smaller keyboard to get some of that slimmed down, I think, some of that tech that they have in there. And using the Samsung phones for that. So I could see how maybe there's some unique and niche use cases for that. It's the kind of the first one that I've seen published on a particular you know, company or something doing something like this.
Yeah.
But that whole trying to convert to phones to PCs and all that seems to have been going on for as long as there's been smartphones.
Redfly. Anybody remember Redfly?
Yes.
Yep.
Still have it.
Me too. Never did work right, but I still have it. Which is too bad. I thought it was a good idea. I just didn't execute well. I should finish up with my list of stuff. So I generally don't buy a lot of new stuff, but this year for some reason I bought a couple. And so I bought the Pixel 3a. I jumped from the 2, by the way. So if I had a Pixel 3, I probably wouldn't have upgraded. But I went from a 2 to a 3A, and it's quite a significant jump. Or it was quite a significant jump for me. I was really surprised because I didn't think the Pixel 2 was a bad device at all. You know, which is why I went to a 3A anyway. But Pixel 2 was performing just fine. It wasn't slowing down. And Pixel 3 is way faster. Really, really like it a lot. And I didn't go to the big one because I just found the big phones, the wear and tear on my thumb joint. It's pretty bad. And so, you know, I was in pain. So a couple of years ago, I switched from, you know, the big iPhone to the smaller one, and from the bigger Android. Well, I guess I was on the Nexus. Was it the Nexus? The Nexus 6, whatever it was called. I went from that to the smaller Pixel 2 and now the 3A. So very much happier with the smaller devices. Like Frank, I also picked up the iPad Mini 5 specifically because I wanted an iPad Mini that could support the Apple Pencil, at least the first generation. And I'm really glad I made the switch. I probably don't use the Pencil as much as I thought I might, but I use it enough that it has been worth the upgrade. And I had a spare Pencil, so I didn't have to go buy another one. And finally, just, let's see, in July, I think, I bought the Prime Day. Yeah, I bought it on Amazon Prime Day. I got the Acer Chromebook Spin 13, which is normally like, I think over $800, but was on sale for $599, and I thought, you know, it would make a good replacement for my now 2.5-year-old Samsung Chromebook Plus. And so I did that, And, you know, one of the nice things when you buy a Chromebook is there's a bunch of Google offers for new Chromebooks that you may have, you know, even if you're replacing one you already have. And so I got a year free of, what is that thing called? Google One, which gives me extra, I think, up to 100 megabytes of Google Drive storage and discounts and a few things that don't really apply to me, but that's okay. So really, really happy with those three. I just posted an item up to my personal website about using the Spin 13 with its built-in Wacom EMR stylus to do my daily doodle project. So really not as good. Well, I should say really. It is not as good as an Apple Pencil on an iPad Pro or iPad Mini, but it is pretty darn good. And had I never used an iPad Pro with an Apple Pencil, I would have been very much more impressed. As it is, it's a pretty good experience. It's not a perfect experience. It's not as good, as I said, as an Apple Pencil. But boy, considering I don't have to spend extra $100 for it and that it is built into the Chrome, I mean, physically built into the Chromebook, so I just pull it out and push it back in. You know, I don't need extra storage, physical storage to carry it around or anything. It is awesome. And as there's a photo I have on my blog that the stylus for the Chromebook Spin 13 from Acer is actually longer than Samsung's stylus, which is also based on Wacom EMR technology. And so it's a lot easier to write and draw with. And by the way, for those of you who haven't played Wacom EMR styluses, they're pretty interesting. There's no battery. There's nothing to charge, nothing to plug in, nothing to recharge. It just uses it, and yet it's in some kind of active technology.
Yeah, the Samsung S Pen is that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess, Jack, does your Samsung phone, did it come with a stylus?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I've used it a couple of times. It's one of those things. I said, well, I need to try to deal with it, but it does serve as a remote you can take, and, you know,
like a Surface Book, like a Surface Pro.
Yeah.
Pencil or
it's,
pen.
It's just not something that. Yeah, Steve's right. It's gimmicky.
Which is funny, right? Coming from a bunch of old Windows mobile users where we had to use a stylus with our touchscreen. And now it's like, don't really need it.
Well, if I did a lot of note-taking, it might be nice, but it's just not for me at this point in time.
Speaking of note-taking, you know, I don't know why I do this to myself, but about every 2 years, I decide to try a folding keyboard, a Bluetooth keyboard. And every 2 years, I'm kind of disappointed. So this year, I bought this. It's a no-name. In fact, I don't even remember what the brand is. They don't even write it on itself. But I bought this folding keyboard. So it's not bad looking, you know. And it has separate connect options for iOS, Android, and Windows. Excuse me, but not Mac, interestingly enough. And like all folding keyboards, it's a little funky. The layout is okay. Typing on it takes a bit of time. That fold changes the dynamics of touch typing more than one would expect. But that's true for every folding keyboard I've used. But the problem with this one, and again, I'm trying to find a name. It's not even written on the device. The problem with this one is I have to repair it with my iPad every time I use it, which is bloody.
How much was it?
This was like $30.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still use quite frequently my Microsoft folding keyboard. I always take it with me because it works really well.
I just posted a link to that thing.
Yeah.
You can still buy them some places. Microsoft's not selling them anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's basically a folding Surface keyboard.
I had the other one. I had the long one, you know, that folded in the lengthwise. It didn't fold in the middle. And it was pretty good for typing. I liked it, but it only worked for about 8 months. It died, and Microsoft wouldn't honor the warranty, so well.
Wow.
Kind of gave up on that one. And I did call. I spoke to the folks at the Microsoft store, local Microsoft store. Got no satisfaction, so I said, screw it. Won't buy Microsoft keyboards anymore. life is not that difficult.
Unfortunately, this that folding one that Jack had is so good that people are trying to sell them for $180 now.
What did it cost when it was new?
About $79.
Yeah, I think when I bought it, it was $89 or $99. I forget.
I'll give a shout out to the keyboard that this was supposed to replace, by the way, and I still have it. It's a non-folding Bluetooth keyboard. It's ultra thin. It is about the thickness of, wow, what is it? Oh, actually, I can hold it up for you. I don't know what this is, how thick it is. This is the one it was supposed to replace. As you can see, it's not very thick. It's a full size. It doesn't fold any, but it's super thin, super light. A rechargeable battery lasts forever. I'm gonna go back to using it. It's from a company called Jellycomb. One word. And it's the only thing I've ever bought from them. But it is really good. And I have to say, they have excellent customer service. The first one I got didn't work. Or some of the keys didn't work, I should say. And so I sent them an email saying, hey, you know, the keys don't work. Can I exchange it? And they said, nah, just chuck the one you got and we'll ship you a new one. We've got your address through Amazon. So I purchased it through Amazon. So highly recommended, good tech. Like I said, the first one came bad, but the manufacturer or distributor, whatever you want to call them, did right. You know, they said, you know, just don't worry about it. We'll send you another one. And they were good to their word, and I got it probably within a week. It wasn't like a four-month wait or anything.
I just looked on Amazon, and the Microsoft folding keyboard is there for $75.
Wow, that's expensive. Yeah.
You know, but I've had mine, I don't know, close to 3 years. Works really well.
Yeah, so it's back to the drawing board for me. But that said, like I said, this does not take a lot of space. I just wanted something to take even less space, you know.
True.
But that's okay. You know, it's first world problems. There are worse things in the world to worry about. let's see. What else was I going to say? Rave about the Chromebook. You know, it's as a person who doubted the Chromebook when they first came out, said, why would I want to spend $100 on a notebook that just ran Chrome? It is pretty amazing what you get these days, and it's not cheap. The one I bought, like I said, is kind of the high mid-range of the price. It's not quite as expensive as a Pixelbook, but it's not cheap. It's not a $300 Chromebook. But on the other hand, you know, I can run Android apps, so I could run all the Microsoft Office components on it without any pain, and was pretty impressed by the features available, especially in Excel. You know, all the graphing is there, all the equations or the formulae are there to do statistics and, you know, that kind of stuff. And also the new Chromebooks, I don't know if it's hit my other one yet. You can install, both of them can. You can install Linux in a container. It's called, Google calls it Project Crostini. And so I'm running Android, Linux, and Chrome OS all at the same time. There's no rebooting necessary. You just, so you know, you can have an Android app, and you can have Chrome browser up, and you can have something running in the background in Linux. You can install Linux apps, which is pretty amazing. I last week I was talking to John, and I were talking about, and I told John, you know, I was able to get X11 running on it. And I should say, there was no configuration. It is running on it. Let me rephrase that. X11 is built into the Linux container. And what I did need to install were some of the X11 utilities. Not that I needed them. I just wanted to get XIs up to see if it would run. And sure enough, X apps run just fine and dandy. There's a couple little quirks, like the mouse has to be in the container window for it to recognize it. But, you know, big deal. That's not a huge problem. But pretty amazing, you know. No, I don't have to know how to configure a virtual machine and download an ISO to install. I just flipped the switch in the window and said, okay, Linux containers are now running. I'm going to boot one for you, okay? And sure enough, up it came. Really, really impressed.
What fun is that?
John.
Well, you can build, really the container is based on LXC.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the native Linux containerization environment, if you will. And you can do your own customized containers based on Ubuntu, Fedora. The default one, the Christini one, is Debian 9. They haven't upgraded to Debian 10 yet. One expects that will probably happen within the next 6 months to a year, maybe. I don't know. But, you know, it's as much tech capability from a container standpoint as any geek would want,
yep.
I think, or as simplistic as just, you know, installing applications. I think for most users, you're going to probably stick to the Android and the web apps if you use Chromebook. I'm connected in my, with Skype Android using my Pixelbook right now. So, you know, it meets all my needs.
Yeah, it's really kind of amazing, isn't it, Frank?
Well, you consider you're running basically, now granted, they're all built on Linux, but you're running three different operating systems on the same hardware platform. It kind of gets to a hypervisor-ish core to the hardware, if you will. It's kind of one way to I like to view it. I mean, I, you know, an ideal world, you running, you know, Mac OS or Windows on it, if you know, there, it's capable technically. Whether it perform well or not, I guess, is the open item. But you know, to become operating system agnostic to a hardware platform is kind of a, has always been an interesting concept to me.
Yeah, same here. And the ability to simply run software without waiting for things to be ported and things like that is just amazing. You know, if, for example, I know a few people who are Emacs wonks, and I'm not, but, you know, if I were one of them, I could just boot up Christine. I don't know if Emacs is built into it. I don't think so. But you could probably install it really easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And same with Python. I think the Python...
It's 3.5.1 is what comes based in. You can fairly easily get you up to 3.6 or the latest. You know, I've got VS Code installed on here. Git. I mean, really, that's one of the main reasons why I think Google even developed this was for developers, for their some of their internal folks that wanted to do basically Android development on a Pixelbook.
Yeah.
That's kind of, you know, rumored to be one of the primary use cases to why they even started with this.
Yeah, yeah. And Stephen was asking if Vim or VI is installed. They're. Well, I don't know if a Vim, but VI is there. Yeah. So really, really, I've become a big, big Chromebook fan in the last 2.5 years since I got my first one, the Samsung Chromebook Plus. I still have it, by the way. It's kind of nice to have two Chromebooks.
Yeah, I think they're adding the Android capability in there, really made a lot of difference. Because if they're written well, those apps scale up beautifully. It's like running it in, running a regular app in a on a regular laptop. Especially the Microsoft Office ones.
Yeah.
Put that up full screen. I can't tell if I'm running it on a Chromebook or if I'm running on a Surface. You know, the mobile side.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I'm pretty happy with it. And, you know, I logged in just as I would with any other Office 365 environment, and it automatically saw my OneDrive and let me, you know, bring the files from it and open and close it and stuff. So it's really very nice. Of course, now we live by the cloud, you know, so we also would die by the cloud when it goes down. But, oh, well, life is tough.
Yeah. I proved to myself I can store them on the Chromebook itself. So
yeah, and that's the
other thing. I've got a Pixelbook, so you can. You just have to make the effort.
Yeah, some people are under the impression that you can't store anything on a Chromebook, but my new one's got 128 gigs of storage.
Yeah, same here.
Right? So, you know, it's not a huge amount, but it's the same as the entry-level Surface Pro.
But it's kind of the same on the Surface Pro. If you don't make the effort, it's going to put it in your OneDrive.
Yeah, which is where it should be, really.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, unless you're, like, super secret and you can't store it in the cloud or something.
Or you're somewhere in the woods. And you don't have connectivity. You still need to run your apps.
Yeah.
Which was the case for that Girl Scout event. Yeah, so.
Yeah, which reminds me, you know, my daughter was in India a couple of weeks ago, and her what did I have for her? Oh, the AT&T Day Pass, whatever it's called, International Day Pass, worked fine over there. At least I think so. I haven't seen the bill yet.
That's at $10 a day.
That's the $10 a day, right?
Yep, that's what I use.
And
a few times I travel out of the country.
Yeah. So, but it was interesting. She was in a part of her trip. She was in a city in Jaipur in India that was having some civil unrest. So the government turned off cell sites in 10 regions of the city. And so I sent her a text saying, "Hey, you know." If you lose connectivity, and she said it did happen, she'd lose connectivity every now and then. I said, you're probably in an area where they turned off the cell sites. But that said, it's still pretty amazing to me that you can travel, well, for us, it's roughly one third of the way around the world. And, you know, still have connectivity. You know, she's sending us photos and texts. She did say the hotel Wi-Fi in the various cities she was in was pretty poor, but that may have been because I told her to, you know, turn VPN on 24/7 while she was away, just in case. It's just kind of my advice to anybody leaving the country, is just turn on your VPN, leave it on. And, you know, you can sleep a little easier, I think, or at least I can. The other thing was, I asked before she left, I asked her if she could turn on to find my friends. I'd know where she was when she was international, when she was traveling internationally. That was really kind of cool to be able to, you know, not have to bother her to ask her where you are and how's things going. And it turned out to be interesting because her first leg of the journey was to Japan, to Osaka, where she was going to sync up with her old college roommate before they headed over to India. And a typhoon was hitting Southeast Asia, and it was ripping through Shanghai at the time. And although it didn't hit Japan, basically they canceled all the flights. And so they were kind of stuck in Osaka for about 12 hours, trying to figure out what to do next. But, fortunately, my daughter's Japanese is pretty good, and her friend is fluent, so they're able to figure their way out of it and get to India. But, yeah, it was really cool to see how the day pass works. You know, oddly enough, I have it on my phone, but I don't think I've ever used it, because I tend to use Google Fi when I travel, so I just leave my AT&T iPhone in Wi-Fi only mode and not worry about it. Okie dokie. Well, we are almost at the 1 hour mark. It has been good chatting with you all. Anybody want to add anything?
Mm-hmm. No, but congratulations on 300 episodes. It was just amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Frank was here from episode 2, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. And then John, when did you join, John? About 60?
I joined around somewhere in the late 60s, early 70s, episode-wise. So, yeah, how does it feel to have 300 episodes, Todd?
Old? Yeah, so the podcast started in 2008 when I was doing full-time, not podcasting, but full-time blogging, as some of you might remember, for what used to be... Wow, now I can't remember what it was.
Mobile Content Today.
Yes. Oh, it was Mobile Apps Today previous to that.
Yeah.
And then being Think Mobile and all that. And I just, it's funny, you know, because when I started a podcast as a way to create more content for the blog, really, I asked the company that was contracting me if they wanted to pay for, you know, the hosting and blah, blah, blah. And they said no. I said, oh, that's fine. I'll do it myself. It's cheap enough. And I'm glad I did, because basically that I kept the name and, you know, because I was using my blog's name, kept the name and just kept it going after the blogging gig ended. So it was a good thing. Yeah, 300 episodes. Can't remember hardly any of them.
See Jack there taking pictures with his Windows phone.
I do see that.
It's 10:20.
Actually, I am. Only because I am so impressed with this Skype on the Android phone.
So he can't use the Android phone
to
get the photo.
So you're taking pictures of Skype on your Android phone with your Windows phone that's, you know, 6 years old.
they haven't figured
out... It's taunting the Windows phone.
They haven't figured out how to take it to quickly move your camera, take a picture, and put it back. You know? So you need to have something additional.
Hey Jack, send me a photo of that. I'll put it on the blog.
I just did a little video.
Oh, and, okay.
Very short, and I'll send it to you.
Okay.
I'll send it to you. Yeah.
But anyway, it was great. Sorry, we had a little bit of audio problem with Steven. Not sure why that is, but we had a bit of audio. But it was good to have Steven, who was actually on the podcast before John. Oh boy, I can't remember when. But it was early on in 2008, 2009. That period, Steven was on first time, I think. And then you guys all shortly followed him, I think. But it's been a lot of fun, folks. And so this has been Mobile Zoo Podcast 300. And we basically just talked about stuff we've been buying lately. And we will talk to you later.